The adventure of San Miniato was soon forgotten in the multiplicity of affairs which assailed me, and which left me no time to amuse myself about those of the legend. The Pope, however, had abundance of leisure, and having crowned the grandnephew, he would have had no objection to canonize the granduncle. He spoke to me about it and repeated the homily of the canon, but the ranks of heaven occupied me less than those of this world. I therefore turned a deaf ear to his holiness and left to the consistory the care of its own promotions. 13th, same state of emperor's health, bath and exercise as usual. Sir Hudson could no longer close his eyes. Whenever his soldiers met our priests, they ran and knelt down before them. They were seduced, and England was lost. It was in vain that he used increased vigilance, reprimands or punishments. Piety prevailed over fear, holy water over flogging, and no sooner did his Irishmen perceive the cassock than they prostrated themselves, kissed the hands and feet of the missionaries, and craved a benediction. The governor, overcome by the obstinacy of the troops, laid the blame upon the missionaries and caused them to be closely watched. The emperor could not possibly see what importance could be attached to that interchange, and the genuflections, and felt hurt at the manner in which the missionaries were treated. I shall not allow that heretic to humble the tiara of St. Peter, said he to me, laughing. The Pope and the consistory would never forgive me were I to put up with those insults. Call the priests. Bonavita came and received orders never to go beyond the limits. Let people say after that I do not take care to cause the church to be respected. 14th. The emperor had been tolerably well all day yesterday and part of the night. This morning he was rather dejected, and after having taken a few turns, he came into the house again, breakfasted, and went into his apartment. I feel uncomfortable, said he. I should wish to sleep, to read, to do, I don't know what. Bring for Marchand, let him bring me some books and close the windows. I shall go to bed and see in a little while whether I'm better. But here's Racine, doctor. Now you are on the stage and I'm listening. Edgemachy! Ah, that is the play for unfortunate father. Sire, if it were Mastasio. Oh, you are afraid of your accent? The meter of the poetry will conceal your Italian inflections. Begin! I hesitated, and he took the book, read a few lines, and let the volume escape from his hands. He had fallen upon this celebrated passage. J'ai passé jusqu'au lieu où l'on gardait mon fils, puisqu'une fois le jeu vous souffrait, que je vois le seul bien que me reste, et d'acteur et de trois. J'ai, Seigneur, pleuré un moment avec lui. Je ne l'ai point encore embrassé aujourd'hui. He was greatly affected and hid his face. Doctor, said he, I'm too agitated. Leave me alone. I withdrew. He became more calm, slept a few minutes, and sent for me again. Sleep had dispelled his indisposition, and he was less gloomy and agitated. He was going to shave, and as I had heard that this ceremony was singular, I remained to witness it. He was in his shirt, his head uncovered, and two servants by the side of him. One held the looking-glass and towel, the other the remainder of the apparatus. The emperor soaked half his face, gave back the brush, wiped his hands and mouth, took a razor, which had been dipped in warm water, and shaved the right side of his face with an uncommon degree of dexterity. Is it ready, Novaris? Yes, sir. Well, now face about. There, ho! The line fell upon the left side of his face, which he shaved with the same ceremonies and the same promptitude. The expression of his countenance was full of kindness. He passed his hand over his chin. Hold glass up, my well shaved. Yes, that is right. Not a hair has escaped. What say you? No, sir, said the servant. No? I think I see some. Hold the glass up higher. Place it in a better light. How is this rogue? You flatter. You deceive me. Here at St. Helena? On this rock? And you? You are an accomplice. And at the same time, he gave little blows to both gently boxer ears, laughed, made them laugh, and pursued them in the most comical manner. After this, he took a toothpick, then brushed his teeth and washed his mouth with a mixture of brandy and cold water, part of which he swallowed. I asked him why he did not reject the whole. Because, said he, what does good to the gums cannot do any harm to the stomach. Is it not odd that I have never been able to use anything but cold water to wash my mouth? Tepid water occasions a convulsive cough. Hot water produces vomiting, and I could never gargle without running the risk of choking or swallowing the gargle, even if it were poisonous. And I observed, indeed, that part of the liquid being raised by the epiglottis fell through the aperture of the glottis into the larynx and produced the cough, the efforts, and the vomiting. Whilst I was speaking with the emperor, Marchand had prepared in the next room his sponge, his washstand, and his clothes. He passed into it and washed his face and head, throwing the flannel far from him after he had gone. You see, doctor, said he, fine arms, breast plump and rounded, skin white, and my hand, how many amongst the fair sex would be jealous of it? The servant was washing his skin, and Napoleon was passing in review the charms and the defects. Some European ladies interrupting his description to stimulate his servant, taking it up again and again, discontinuing. Madame was lively animated. Heard of you, rascal! And was very anxious to have a child of the race of heroes. Harder, I tell you, as if you were scrubbing an ass. She came in one day, but that fellow does not brush me. Doctor, I will relate to you another time. Get out of the way. Let me punish this fellow's shoulders for having spared mine as he has done. And in saying this, he gently pulled the servant's ears and gave him some slight blows. Now let us see what the correction has produced. Give me the eau de cologne. Having caused some to be poured on his hands and washed part of his body with it, he put on a flannel waistcoat, silk stockings, breeches of white kerseymere, shoes with gold buckles, a black stock, a white waistcoat, and the ribbon of the Grand Cross of the Legion of Honor, which he constantly wore when he was not in an undress, a green coat and the cocked hat, and his dress was complete. Now, doctor, said he, the remainder of the day is ours. No more working, no more reading. As soon as I am en costume, I either receive visits or walk about. I think no more about anything.